Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Roger Bacon, a Franciscan friar from the 13th century. You might think of Roger Mora, or one of those English superheroes. He's a bit of a superhero of the medieval world, and there is remarkably, quite literally, some trivia about him and a bit of mystery. Did he invent gunpowder? Did he discover the lens? Was he the father of modern science, as his namesake, surnamesake, Francis Bacon, a few hundred years, probably 300 years later, claimed that he was the person who picked out the essence of scientific thinking. And so he's someone to get to know. Now, I'll just give you a little bit of a background. Last night, when I was going to go for my walk, there was a drizzle. And so I sort of did a bit of reading. Rather than going out and walking and podcasting, I stayed at home, got warm, and decided I'd read a little bit about this particular figure. Because in general, there's only so far people go back in history. So they, in science, they tend to stop with Newton, and I've sort of gone back into the medieval roots of Newton with Giles of Rome and intrigue right into back to the 8th century, even earlier. And so too, going further back, you look at the Royal Society, it's founded on Francis Bacon, and Francis Bacon refers to Roger Bacon, this English tradition. And so I spent a little bit of time, rather than pacing the streets of Glenbrook at night, just rambling on, doing a bit of research. And it was really rewarding research. So let's paint a picture. There's William the Conqueror. So England has got the sort of English tribes that has a Norman invasion in 1066. This is about 200 years afterwards, not a long time afterwards. Henry III, Richard the Lionhearted, invasions, crusades going through the sort of Monty Python, Holy Grail type of stuff. The sort of the time, the legends of King Arthur's a little bit before that, or the theory of King Arthur, but this is true medieval England, where there's pages and lieges, page boys, squires and knights, a whole system throughout them, the feudal process where people, the lord owns the land and he lets people farm the land as basic slaves, so that feudal stuff. And there's a whole swathe of history that few people know about. This is setting up the history of Roger Bacon, in that his family's a wealthy family, supporter of Henry III, one of the English kings going through there. I don't quite understand it. And the English king gets in league with an unpopular alliance, and the alliance is with this kingdom that really no one has heard of, or a family, which involves Cyprus, Jerusalem. So they've invaded, the Crusades invaded, created this kingdom area, and a family has sort of occupied it and have come to influence in England. And the king promotes these people, creates unrest, and the barons have a war and oppose the king, or put their own king in. So this is all in areas of English history that you really haven't heard of, because the line of official history is so complex that you don't realise that there's other threads through it. So this creates a series of barren wars. This is where the people rise up against the king and sort of limit the monarchy. So what's sort of been happening is that in England, a bit on the outskirts of Europe, the barons have been able to still have a monarch, but sort of limit it. gradually have a more and more limited monarchy. That's a monarchy, a monarch plus parliament, a monarch plus a council. And indeed, if you look through a lot of things, there's always been absolute kings haven't been able to expand or rule a very large portion of the land, and people require the king, but they don't require the king, so to speak. So Roger Bacon's family get their land confiscated, or whatever it is. Roger Bacon goes to Paris, the big learning centres there. Now, if you to understand the English are this entire idea of English Christianity coming down, and the English relationship between English Christianity and the church, and to understand that around the 8th century the church papal lands increased, but you still had sort of pagan groups in Saxony and above like that. The church had remarkable success in Ireland, and then Ireland converted North England, and North England came down and converted Germany. So the sort of medieval superpower, sort of intellectual superpower. Now, the other thing to understand is that the church was really the vestige of Roman knowledge. So the Roman super, sort of like, you know, years after, the church was really like the USA of its time, in a certain sense, in terms of the big area. So in essence, you have the sort of Roman knowledge, the Roman reinvasion of Europe, and you have Roger Bacon in Paris, and there's this thing that he becomes a Franciscan friar, and the Franciscan friar, in order to keep them under control, they forbid these people to publish or do any scientific work. And so this Roger Bacon is doing some, you could say, very menial work, and strikes up with a relationship with someone who secretly funds him to write medieval knowledge down. And this person is someone called Guy, and he eventually becomes Pope Clement the VII, I think it is, coming off there. And so it's sort of by this freak of nature, Roger Bacon starts writing down these prolific works, and there you go. In terms of, he's sort of like attributing science to him is like attributing naturalist discoveries to David Attenborough. He was a collector, not necessarily a great observer, and so there's a whole series of interesting things. For me, the interesting thing is to see how much the the modern day school curriculum corresponds exactly to the medieval curriculum, we'll talk about this. There's a view of any knowledge you really want you can find in the pub, and all it requires you know the local hotel is to go around to the various people and listen to what they're saying and correct their arguments, improve their arguments, and eventually the bad arguments will disappear and the good arguments will be left, and therefore you've got good knowledge. And that was the medieval view of scholarship. It's called scholasticism, and scholasticism was exactly that process. And for us, there's sort of no gathering of new facts. Everyone knows everything. It's just people got the views wrong and you can talk to them. And that's the medieval idea of logic or dialectic, which in turn goes into communism. It's pretty amazing. It goes into communism and stuff like that. And this is what we consider pre-scientific lack of logic. However, the medieval... Well, firstly, let's start unpicking things. There's the word syllabus. Now, syllabus was actually a mistranslation around the 13th century of the word, the Greek word, table of contents. Monk misspelt the word syllabus, and people then saw the word syllabus on top of the writing. Now, to understand at this stage, there was, in the medieval time, heaps of bad translations, heaps of bad misspelling. And the word syllabus came out of the Middle Ages as a mistake. So it's come forward. Then the idea was that the syllabus, or the medieval curriculum, or I suppose that's the word, curriculum, is the groups of studies, was basically between arts and science, incredibly. And it's broken into seven levels, but the art was sort of the art of thinking, and that was broken up into three subjects. One subject called grammar, logic, and rhetoric. So grammar was not so much the way you structured English, but the way you structured your thoughts, or expressed your thoughts. And then logic was not logic as we think of it. It's logic as a dialectic. This is where you considered questions and then you assume the right answer. So to us, it's very hard to understand. And rhetoric is being able to broadcast it. So you can imagine, this is form your thoughts, clean your thoughts, broadcast your thoughts, and then this would be sufficient. And so these three ways are coming together, three roads, tri for three, via road is trivia. And so the origin of the word trivia is what people studied, and the idea is just this is your basic working knowledge. And this corresponds roughly to the arts, the history, the people look at history, they interpret it, they argue it. When you actually look at historical or historiography, this is a whole medieval way of thinking. So, as I said, there was going to be seven levels. There's four other greater levels, and this is more analytic levels, but still not experimenting, but still thinking. And essentially behind this level is the maths, and this corresponds to the medieval and to sciences. And when you really come to think of it, a lot of the management structures and a lot of the structures in education today come from this medieval route, and of course don't intersect with modern technological science. But there are four areas here, which is basically mathematics, not quite algebra, but the use of numbers. Geometry, this is counting numbers, geometry, spatial numbers, drawing figures and stuff like that. Music, which is thought to be a temporal use of numbers. So it's interesting that in the medieval idea that the understanding of music was associated with numbers, and astronomy, which is sort of the numbers out in space. Now, we of course now have got much more advanced technology, but back then, so you had these four levels, and going in amongst this was all these sort of bad translations. So they had bad Aristotle and got better Aristotle. So if you can imagine, people were getting almost a trade magazine of Aristotle, and it coming out better, and people really who don't have the basic understanding of the original Hebrew or Greek in which this is written, come up with their own things, and so there's all these people arguing against each other with a really poor source material, a poor way of doing it, into which there's this, you know, Francis Bacon did write a few things which led into science, and we'll sort of get into that a bit. So he allegedly discovered gunpowder. So, but what he did was he saw a Chinese firecracker and described it and had a guess at the composition inside it. He didn't do any experiments. We don't know whether he actually made gunpowder himself. He realized that there was saltpeter, which is potassium nitrate, which is a salt you get from boiling urine. Yeah, nitrates in the urine and stuff like that. Then carbon black, which he's described as the burnt willow. So willow leaves very few salts behind. So if you burn wood without oxygen, you leave carbon. And if you burn it through, that's gone, you'll be left with this white material, which is a metal oxide. The metal oxides left behind, and that's very basic. So there's you select your various woods, dry them out, and they don't have a lot of salt, they're a lot of carbon, they're quite fleshy. So this is, you get carbon and sulfur, which is known for burning, and he had a stab at the ratio, and the ratio was not even close, and that's enough for the West to have independently discovered gunpowder. But subsequently people said, oh, he discovered it, and sort of began to amass ideas with him. Now he also, sort of coming out of the ancient, there was the science of perspectives, which is the view of optics, and he wrote up about the magnifying glass. It's pretty unclear whether he actually ground them or did any research on it. Now, the other, I suppose, interesting aspect is that so Aristotle said that you observe or gather facts, and then that should be your basis of thinking, which is like the very earliest views of science, you know, so what exactly science is. And the more I think about it, the more I sort of, you know, every couple of hours I sort of think I can get a bit closer, then it just goes a bit further from me. Francis Bacon had Roger Bacon had a manuscript allegedly from Aristotle called The Secret of Secrets, and it basically charted out a bit about the very early modern scientific method. But like so much of this in the Middle Ages, a lot of things were fraud. So if you can imagine, like today we've got the trashy magazines, the novelettes, and popular culture. In the Middle Ages, there wasn't sort of a big feeling that there was a difference between the top literature and junk literature, all mixed together. And what I sort of find it fascinating is that this very, very glim ember of modern science traces back not to the ancients, but to a fraudster who wrote up about these things. And the words are so poorly expressed that these people really understand it because they had nothing else. They had no clarity in their life. And so Roger Bacon began to write various things. Unfortunately, it's not them. Then you have the the idea of him perhaps being a wizard. I sort of love this idea. And the idea of necromancy, which is a scary, what we would call fairground skull. In this case, it was a brass head that he had, which was inhabited by the spirits of the dead and could speak. And, you know, it's full Middle Ages, and so that's another aspect of it, if you read into it. So there's some trivia for you, the trivia of trivia. What does trivia come from? You know, my first trivia question is, what is the origin of trivia? Well, trivia means the three ways, three ways, and it goes across. In general, you look back to these people, and I think perhaps the sort of quotable quote, which sort of touches on the madness of the Middle Ages, and it was truly a wild, mad time. I still think we still have the Middle Ages madness in some of the corruption and goings on I see in society. People doing things that are very crazed and activated by stupid things. In that setting, it's very interesting to hear Francis Bacon, or Roger Bacon, his analysis of what he thought was Aristotle, which could have been fraudulently written, was that by considering the fact it leads to a calmness of the mind. I think that really gets... it didn't have the scientific method, but it had the scientific aspiration. I think that might be there. And that aspiration was picked up on. And then you have, for me, I think the true sort of founder of modern science, the idea that science is about generating more science. You know, science is not about understanding, it's about understanding, but it's understanding in such a way that generates, which is that inductive reasoning. So Francis Bacon really is the key innovator there. I think a lot of people have been stumbling around the place because the world, the universe is it appears very simple in terms of our maths that we use to describe every day is very simple, but the actual objects in front of us are algebraic, highly mathematical objects to come across. So it's a very interesting thing to go in and actually apply the torch of reason or the torch of analysis to this. And so often you see in school textbooks that no one's heard of Roger Bacon. I'm pretty sure. I'm most definitely sure that they attribute the discovery of gunpowder. Move it up 400 years to Francis Bacon, and you just got all these things which are really going across. Another really interesting aspect before I finish is that Roger Bacon began to listen and criticise the calendar and the Julian calendar, which had the inability to add the correct number of leap days in leap years. I was just going completely mad. So, if you've got to understand, there weren't the sort of the population of Europe, possibly it was 10 million. It's like the size, the whole of Europe was pretty much the size of a large current day city. So it's a bit to understand that these people tended to do a lot. There weren't a lot of people around, there wasn't a lot of societies and groups. Usually one person covered a lot of ground. Okay, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll get on to more podcasting. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.